Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an O and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see the good guys, Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff and the gang over there at 2330 7th Avenue. And this guy here has caused a few crash-ups in his day. Offensive lineman for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Brendan Labatt. Let's talk about that because you were just in a car at a racetrack in Estevan and you won. Tell us about it.
We went out and took the stock car out to Estevan season opener, and a little bit of good luck. There's a couple good cars that started ahead of us that had some mechanical breakdowns, and we're kind of there to the good fortune there, and I was able to take the lead with four to go and held on to it, and then went down to Minot the next night and had a pretty good run going there. We started the 12th, and we were up into second and led a few laps. We were battling, just running the inside. He was up on the high side of the track, and then unfortunately with five to go, broke the motor. So that's kind of how it ended up, but it was a new car to us, and we spent a lot of time on it. I mean, I built it with my own shocks and kind of got my own suspension package going, and finally just this last weekend the whole car kind of come to life and was finally working pretty good.
Is that piss you off when it wrecks like that, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, this one is a little bit self-induced. I mean, we were running a little too deep in the gear, and I mean, I was buzzing the motor off the rev limiter at 7,400 RPM, and it was good for the first probably 100 times it clicked off the chip, but once it got into the later laps and the engine temperature started to go up a bit, unfortunately, the connecting rod let go, so that's part of it. I mean, you can't... if it would have been the rod bolt or something that, you know, one of us had done, but I mean, we got to take these, you know, the manufacturer's castings on the internal parts as being, you know, quality and not fatiguing. And, yeah. You know, unfortunately it let go. So that's part of it. I mean, there's nothing you can really do. I mean, the fact that the car was up front makes it a little bit easier, I guess, to send it goodbye.
Yeah. Hey, so I wouldn't imagine Dale Earnhardt is working on his car like you're working on your car. How gratifying is it for you to be, you know, at the ground level, your own shocks and working on the motor and all that type of stuff, and then actually driving the thing around the track?
Oh, I mean, that's the utmost satisfaction. I mean, when you're able to win, you know, because it's really a, you know, a three-man show in our operation, and then, you know, my dad is kind of the day-to-day, and then my brother will kind of do some of the specialty work, you know, with the fabrication, or, you know, he does a lot of engine assembly now too. But I mean, that's kind of been, ever since I started racing when I was 15 years old, we've been building our own motors. So anytime you can you know, put your dad's stuff into victory lane, there's nothing more gratifying than that. That's for sure, because it's great to be able to do it with the family. And I know I talked about that earlier in the off season, one of the interviews with the riders. It's, you know, with a group of 70 guys that you call brothers, but when you actually win with your dad and your brother, I mean, it's one of the best feelings in the world, you know, especially when you're running such a, you know, kind of out there program where you do it all yourself. I mean, it's been we've taken a lot of beatings along the way trying to figure it out and, you know, learn and just refine the setup to where it is now. And hopefully this is a good baseline. We can, you know, just kind of tweak it a little bit from here on.
Riders outstanding offensive lineman Brendan Labatt joining me here on Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako. So that was going to be kind of my follow-up question. I guess you've almost answered it then. So what's more exhilarating, winning the 2013 Grey Cup on home turf in a monumental game, or winning a you know, with your brother and your dad in Estevan here just recently?
Oh, the Grey Cup for sure. You know, it would be it would have to be, you know, one of the, they got a massive race down in Boone, Iowa, where they'll get close to, you know, 900 cars and they run them throughout the whole week. And I mean, that would be like the equivalent of the Grey Cup if you were able ever to go there and run. You know, even when we were down in Texas in February, if we would have been able to, you know, win that whole, it was a 10 race deal that unfortunately the cumulative points got cut short after only five programs because of the bad weather. We got rained out, but you know, if we were able to win something like that on a you know, a big show down in the States somewhere, that would be, you know, something we could hang our hat on and maybe compare to a Grey Cup win. Yeah. But in terms of just a local show down at Estevan, that's not quite on the same level yet. But we know where we got to go to try and get onto that level. I think we just got to find the time to get down there.
Okay, so like Chris Jones and coaches before didn't cringe when you're doing this in the off season. And a lot of professional athletes aren't allowed to do things. You know, even James Hetfield from Metallica, he likes to skateboard. He's gotten his contract. He can't skateboard because once he wiped out and they had to cancel a show or two on tour. There's nothing in your contract prohibiting you from doing this? I guess not.
Nope. Yeah, I've never had an issue, and actually had you know, some management in the past that's actually kind of supported. They've come out and you know, watched or at least kept tabs on me to see how we were doing. But yeah, no, that's never really been an issue. And came in on Monday to work out and got congratulations and stuff. So I think as long as you're winning and doing good, I think it seems to be received pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. Brendan Labatt. Okay, how did you get it? Tell the people, young kids listening to this, how did Brendan Labatt get into football?
In grade 9, I went out just, I mean, I went out because I had friends that were playing. I was too big to ever play. We only had the Pee Wee football, minor football team in Weyburn. We didn't have an Atom or a Bantam when I was growing up. So I was over the 135-pound weight limit. But as a grade 9 in Weyburn, even though we went to the junior high, we were able to go over to the comprehensive high school after school and go play and practice with them. And I went out my grade 9 year and didn't do anything but hold a bag and take my lickings out there. And then grade 10, had a coach that right from the get-go, spring camp, he was pretty determined he was going to play me at guard, and that was kind of when I first got into it. But I went out just because of the the social aspect of it, and I guess that's what kind of drugged me out. And now I don't know, I kind of don't really view it in the same light. I kind of got a different idea, and you know, it's kind of, I always think of it, you know, football is like boxing, and that, you know, just because your buddy was going to join the boxing club, I mean, that's not for everybody. And I think it's the same thing for football. You know, the consequences can be real. You know, there's a risk of injury out there, and you know, it's not for everybody. And although it's a great team game, you know, I've always been a little unsure to just, you know, recommend football to somebody just based on, you know, you wanting to be around your friends. But that was what got me into the game. So I don't know if I'm completely seeing things, but I that's kind of how I've changed my tune on it. But I mean, that's how how it all started for me back when I was in grade 9.
Okay, so what keeps you coming back? What keeps you coming back to the football field? Because you've taken your lumps for sure.
Oh, I mean, it just, it's something that you can never perfect. I mean, you can do it over and over again. And I mean, I approach the game of football the same way I approach, you know, the racing. And, you know, we prepare all week for it and you go out and try your best. And then you got to look at the film and, you know, be pretty realistic about it. I mean, if there's something glaringly wrong there, I mean, you got to be honest about to yourself and address it. And I mean, I think that's what keeps me coming back, is just to try and, you know, find a more efficient way to play the game. And I mean, obviously you always want to get bigger and stronger and faster, and then that's a never ending aspect of it. But just the technical side of offensive line play is one that, I mean, has kind of really grabbed me, and I mean, it's almost consumed me. And you know, I'm pretty much addicted to it. I mean, if I'm not thinking about how to get the race car to go around faster, I'm thinking about how to be more efficient in a pass set, or how to strike and with the hands or whatever it is. And that, it's just that pursuit of, you know, trying to obtain something that's not easily attained. I mean, that's what keeps me coming back to it.
Would you like to coach? Would you like to bring the next Brendan Labatt up in the world, the young guys?
Yeah, maybe down the road. That's been something I've been thinking about. But I mean, I got a lot of other stuff I like to do in the falls. Unfortunately, football season is, you know, runs right into the fall. So once I am done playing, I mean, I might take a couple years away and, you know, go do some of the things that I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Go camping and do some stuff with the family and stuff. But yeah, down the road, I think it's definitely something, you know, I have been fortunate to play with some great coaches, and one of the first guys that comes to mind is, you know, Bob Wiley. And
yeah,
you know, Wiles was in his, you know, late 60s, early 70s, and he just sits there and watches the film, and that's what he loves to do. And I can see why, you know, like when you're just trying to help the guy become more efficient and you know, and improve him in whatever manner. I mean, once you're not physically able to do it anymore, I think I can see why you want to try and pass it on down and critique. I mean, I think it's definitely something that I'm open to, but I definitely know I got a couple other things that I want to cross off my bucket list before I jump right into that.
The Brett Joneses of the world, the Ben Heenans, those guys have made the National Football League. Did you have a chance to make a National Football League team? I thought you did it at some point. Do you regret not playing in the National Football League? Because damn straight you could have, because you've been the best offensive lineman in this league for a long time. So did you have a chance, Brendan?
Yeah, I went down in 2000, well, it would have been January 2010, and at that time they kind of had their lockout going on, so they weren't really looking to sign guys, but I did go to for a few workouts, and then, I mean, hindsight 2020, all things over again, if I would have known and been a little bit more well-informed when I went to Pittsburgh, and they offered me to sign a futures contract, and I wasn't really completely sure what the futures contract was, so, and I was going right from Pittsburgh over to Indy, so I just kind of thought, well, if Pittsburgh wants me, you know, because I only thought there was a real contract, and you know, at that time we were trying to get a signing bonus up front in some capacity, so I mean, it was over, and then once I went to Indy, I mean, that was one of the worst experiences I think I've had as a football player, just in terms of, you never really felt like such a piece of meat before in my life as getting thrown into a room for a day and a half and then just a random knock on your door and, oh, you're going to run now, you know. It was just like a couple of Quiznos subs and we'll come get you in 36 hours. So after that, I kind of had a bad taste in my mouth, and, you know, it's good to be wanted. And, you know, and then once I came to Saskatchewan, you know, I had some pretty big shoes to try and fill after, you know, you watch who I think is the greatest to ever play the position in the Canadian Football League and Gene Mikowski play, you know. So it was, you just kind of got to come in here and just chomp away. And at that point, we're, you know, I know when I came in, I was 2012 and was hoping to get 10 years out of it, you know, with the Riders. And, you know, this will be number 7 now. So it's been a pretty good run, but I mean, it's a never-ending quest. I mean, and as you go along, I think you learn to appreciate it even more, just because you know, the opportunities are, you know, getting harder and harder to come by now. So I mean, when you got a place that likes you and respects you and treats you well, I mean, there's no reason to do it. You know, bounce around, and that's what I felt like going down to the NFL would have been, is a bounce around system, and I wanted to set up roots, and I got no regrets about coming home to play in Saskatchewan. I mean, we got a great thing going here, and I've been fortunate to be a part of it through, you know, some pivotal times in the organization's history, so it's been great.
Okay, a couple more quick questions for you, because I see your agents ringing the buzzer telling me the interview's got to be done here right away. Hey, Brendan, you guys win the Grey Cup this year. If you win the Grey Cup this year, Brendan Labatt, will you call it a career? Would that be it for you? Would that be the pinnacle right here?
Oh, no.
No?
No. No. No, I don't think so. I mean, I just signed that 4-year deal there last year, and I signed it with the intent to play it out. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I mean, I just finished another offseason of training where, you know, I put up some of the best numbers I've put up in terms of my lifts and stuff like that. So, I mean, I still think I got a lot to try and achieve. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to go from, you know, good to great, really. You know, like I just heard Tiger Woods talking about it with, you know, LeBron. And it's like when you start to do it for over a decade, and, you know, then if you can consistently do it for over a decade, I mean, you're starting to put yourself into that, you know, that next echelon of, you know, the guys that were playing at the top of the game. And, I mean, that's what I'm trying to eventually get to, is just keep working away. And, you know, when I do decide to pack it in, hopefully go down in the same conversation as some of the the greats.
You know what, buddy? I think you're there, but I get what you're saying. You're always striving to be better. But let me ask you this. When your career is over, and hey, I wasn't telling you to quit. That's not what I was saying. I was just asking you if you'd consider quitting because it is a very physical position. And you know, you bring up a really good point. You know, I used to be on the side. I watched you and have a lot of admiration for guys like you. But I remember watching Geno at the end of his career and all those consecutive games played. I don't think people really realize it's a car accident on every play in the trenches there. To do what Geno did over all of those years, guys like him, guys like Roger Aldag, it really is staggering, isn't it? And you look at the guy Joe Thomas with the Cleveland Browns, 10,600 and some consecutive snaps on a team. He never made the playoffs in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, that's incredible, you know, because like you say, I mean, at some point in those 10,000 plays, or I mean, if you were to run the tally on Geno's number, I think you'd far exceed 10,000. And it's the part I have the most admiration for is, you know, during the course of those plays that they were hurt. They had an ankle rolled up on, they had an elbow or a sting or whatever, you know, can go out there. And I mean, you kind of just shrug it off and you keep on going. But, you know, to be able to go out there and play through that sort of stuff and not have your performance ever diminish because of it is, I think that's one of the true testaments, you know, because right now, I mean, if you're out there on a, you know, a fresh ankle roll and it's second and long against some of these pass rushers, I mean, that's a tough situation to be in. And those guys, you know, they seem to have a way of getting through that stuff without anybody else even really knowing they're injured. And I think that's the most impressive part.
Brendan, now or in the past when you first started, which guy kind of gave you fits? Which guy not had you on roller skates, but you really had to dig in and give him your best?
Caron Williams, I always thought was one of the toughest guys. He was a smaller defensive end playing three technique, and those seem to be the guys that are the most slippery inside. You know, it's the bigger guys that want to come straight through you. Usually don't give the problems, but those little twitchy guys. And I mean, Caron was a real polished pass rusher. And second and long, you knew you were in one against him if you were on the man side going one on one.
That's awesome. Okay, Brendan Labatt. So your career's long from over, but how do you want to be remembered? What do you want people to say about Brendan Labatt? If we were to write a biography right now about Brendan Labatt, put a billboard out front of Mosaic Stadium. I know you're humble, but how do you want your career to be remembered right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'd be however my play, you know, whatever people remember about my play. You know, that's one thing to. Since the very, very start, when I started back in 2008, you know, it was always let your play do the talking. You know, if people are going to talk about you, it's going to be because of your play. It's not going to be because anything you're out there saying, yapping on social media, none of that stuff. It's going to be just based on performance. And I mean, at the end of the day, when I'm done and, you know, I don't want to do it no more, people can reflect on it and, you know, view it as they wish, and however they decide to view it, that's how it'll be remembered as.
I like you, bud, because you're old school Saskatchewan. I love it. So what about social media? When teammates get on social media, it's none of your business, I guess, but does it rankle your feathers, or do you get a chuckle out of it?
I kind of get a chuckle out of it. I mean, there's a lot of good guys out there, you know, but it's like, if you're out there and you got stuff to say that's not predicated and based around just being a football player, then I love it. I think it's hilarious, you know, but it's some of the stuff when you got to, I mean, we're pro athletes. I mean, you're paid to come in camp into shape. I mean, unless you're in the top 1% in the world with, you know, some CrossFits or, you know, you're that strong that it's like, wow, that's amazing type stuff. It's like, I don't know if it's really worth, you know, bragging about, because that's kind of unfortunately the way I've always seen social media. Is it's almost like a bit of a, you know, a brag session. It's like, oh, look what I'm doing or what I can do, you know. And it's like, I don't know if I'm really into trying to announce that sort of stuff, unless you are in that, you know, elite 1% group of the world where it's like, yeah, you're on the ground to say and do as you please. But I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it.
You know, I laugh too. Kids, when they get into the sport, they want to be a quarterback, they want to be a running back, they want to be those glamour positions. But it's the linemen that have the best chance of going the furthest in football in terms of, you know, getting a pro career out of it. I'm not saying kids that play football should aspire to be pros, but what I'm saying is they want to be the quarterbacks, the DBs, the receivers, the running backs, but it's the linemen. You look locally, linemen have gone the furthest here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the I think that's the position where, I mean, if you're physically gifted, and I mean, let's face it, if you're a professional lineman, you won a genetic lottery, you know, yep. to have the size that you possess. But then, I mean, it takes a lot more after that, you know, and I think that'd be the biggest thing is, I mean, it's an addicting thing. Once you get into the higher levels of offensive line play, I mean, it's so minute, you know, you're splitting, you know, a 3-inch step is too big, and now you're going to shorten it to 1.5 inches, you know, so it becomes so precise on the angles that it's, it's just a game of chess that just has so many layers to it that you can just keep getting deeper and deeper into it. And, I mean, that's what I've loved about offensive line play. And I think, you know, that's the thing that I think, especially when some of the best linemen have, you know, I think come out of Saskatchewan. And, you know, I think it just goes from the way a lot of us are brought up. And I mean, you get some big guys that are, you know, humble and hardworking, and they see it as a project and just want to, you know, get better. And it's not just about being the best. It's just about trying to get better, you know? And I think that's the, one of the biggest things with offensive line is just that it's so, I mean, all your fundamental movements go against all, you know, everything an athletic or trainer would tell you, you know, is the best way to move. So you're kind of breaking a lot of bad habits there. And so it's a tough position to learn because you've got to take a lot of lumps along the way. But if you can kind of see the bigger picture, and I mean, if you're winning a small battle and then in the set it looks a little bit better, I mean, that's a win, even if you didn't get the results you wanted. So I think that's the biggest thing I love about the position.
Okay, so you like the race cars. You're a very good offensive lineman, good father and husband. But let's talk about this. You were when I texted you the other day to line up the interview, you were busy with the Wildlife Federation filming a fish documentary. Tell me about that to wrap this thing up.
I actually just became on a spokesperson for the Sask Wildlife Federation starting in January this year. So been able to have the good fortune. We're in the process of making a kind of a mini documentary series, just kind of showcasing and highlighting all that the Wildlife Federation does in Saskatchewan. I know when I first got involved with them, I'm an avid hunter and fisher. I mean, as soon as our season's done, I'm up in the bush or, you know, mm-hmm. in the winter, go out ice fishing. And so, I kind of had an inkling into what the Wildlife Federation did, but just how broad and how diverse and, I mean, how critical they are into the sustainability of, you know, our animals and our resources is one thing, but, you know, even the land they manage, you know, so much land, I think it's over 250,000 acres of land. And, you know, so I've been able to do that. And that's what we were out doing. We were out at Buffalo Pound, actually spawning walleye. So that's quite the process that we got to witness. But yeah, I think we made some fish babies.
Very tough guy, very interesting man. Loves it on the racetrack, loves it on the gridiron, and loves it in the lake. I love it. Hey, thanks for this, Brennan. I appreciate you guesting with me on Growing the Game with Ballsy.
Thanks a lot, Ballsy. Thanks for having me on.
And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. And when we're talking about the greats from the Ryder Pass, we got to mention John Lipp, who is a former president of this football team, a very big football fan in our community. How are you today, John?
I'm excellent, Ballsy.
It was nice to see it spring football, you and Tom Shepard. You really do love this game, don't you?
Well, I do, yeah. And I love watching the younger kids play, the high school kids. And, you know, it's just amazing how good those kids are starting to play compared to when I played football in high school. So yeah, they're so much better.
Hey, where did you, let our listeners in. Where did you play? Where did you play high school football? What's your football background, John?
I played at Balfour Tech under the great Gord Curry, when we had those powerhouse teams in the late 50s, early 60s, when we used to dominate football in the province.
Yeah. So what was Gord Curry like as a coach?
He was, you know, just one of a kind. I mean, he wasn't just a great coach, but he had such an influence on me in it, you know, in different ways, just as a mentor and as a just a really good friend, even in that time. And he was just unique and just one of those rare people that had a, you know, an impact on me for the rest of my life.
He really was what was, he was what was the good part of sports, wasn't he?
Indeed, he really was just absolutely the best.
What was your favorite part, John Lipp, about being president of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
Well, I was president in the era of expansion, when we went through those expansion years, when we had teams from the States. And that was an interesting time. And it was, you know, a period that a lot of people look back and say, well, that was not a successful venture. But in a way it was, because had we not gone into expansion during that period and gotten the expansion money from these new teams, the league was financially in a pretty bad state in those days. A lot of the clubs were hurting. The league as a whole wasn't as strong as it, you know, as it is these days. And expansion really helped infuse some much-needed cash into the league and into the various teams. So, and it added some certain excitement, having half a dozen new teams from the States that came up here and played. And as you remember, in the 95 Grey Cup, which I helped bring here to Regina, it was an American team that won their only Grey Cup. The Baltimore Stallions.
Yeah,
won to win the Grey Cup. But it was an interesting. So that was kind of a highlight. But the other highlight for me was that we were able to bring the Grey Cup to Regina for to be held in Regina for the first time ever, and that was an accomplishment that I'm really very proud of, because it really helped Regina and to be on the map nationally as far as hosting an event of that magnitude, which we hosted it, and it was an amazingly successful event. We brought back the whole idea of a Grey Cup festival, which had kind of gone by the wayside for a few years, but we kind of brought that back and made it almost a week long celebration and party, which it's kind of become and has kind of.
Yeah, and you had, of course, the slogan, I believe, was "Huddle Up in Saskatchewan." And,
exactly.
Yeah. Hey, so
because one of the concerns that the league had when we tried to when we applied for the Grey Cup was, well, you don't have enough. We said, that's okay. We'll find the people in Saskatchewan are friendly, and we'll. People will open up their doors, and which they did. And that's out of that grew the slogan, "Huddle Up in Saskatchewan." Come down here, stay with somebody, huddle up.
Yeah, hey, John.
It was very successful.
John Lipp joining us here in the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. It turned out to be a great, great cup. And if I remember correctly, the day of the Grey Cup was kind of a white knuckle ride. I know Al Ford was telling me fans were booing him because it was a bad year for the Riders. Fans were booing him, saying, "You can't even pull off a Grey Cup. Nice windy conditions." Were you John Lipp a little bit nervous, because that was a situation where they I don't know if they were close to canceling or postponing the game, but it was nip and tuck there for a while.
It was very close. I was very nervous, and the reason was that the winds were at a level early in the morning, which exceeded the levels for our insurance policy, that the insurance would cover us. I believe it was up to 80 kilometers, our insurance was okay. But above that, if something happened and we had temporary stands up, and if they collapsed or something, then we would have been liable. So we, that morning, myself and Larry Smith, who was the commissioner, we were constantly in contact with the weather bureau and trying to get constant updates. And we didn't open the gates for a couple of hours before the Grey Cup, simply because we had to wait. And if the winds wouldn't have died down, we would have had to postpone it. We couldn't take the risk of the liability if something were to happen. But fortunately, the winds died down enough so that then we opened the gates and and had a great Grey Cup. Yeah.
The rest is history. Don Matthews and Tracy Hammond, the Baltimore Stallions, beat Doug Flutie, Dave Sapungis, and the Calgary Stampeders. You're also a part of the Ryder Plaza of Honor. Now, can you settle something for me? Just a couple. What's the minimum requirement in terms of playing time to get in to the Ryder Plaza of Honor, John?
Well, ideally, we'd like to have for players, we'd like to have 4 years that they have played for the Rough Riders, not in football generally, but just for the Rough Riders. And that was never much of an issue for many years because players used to come with the team and they would stay with the team. You know, once you're a Rider player, you were a Rider more or less for life.
Right.
But free agencies kind of changed that a bit, and it's becoming a bit more of a challenge because a lot of our really good players come and have one or two good years, and then the free agency, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like Corey Sheets, for example.
Right.
A few years ago, you remember the great year he had.
Yeah.
But he only played here a couple of years, and so that's becoming a challenge. And we are planning to redo the mandate, and we will have to maybe revisit that time frame.
Because
but at the present time, it's for.
There's two names. You mentioned Corey Sheets. I know he was here for a cup of coffee, but he had one of the greatest seasons at a running back spot in Rider history and one of the greatest games here in 2013. And then the other guy that jumps off the map at me is Kerry Joseph. I mean,
he
wins a Grey Cup here, and he's only one of two guys, with Lancaster being the other one, that's an MOP in the league. So you'd kind of have to say, hey, maybe we've got to get Kerry in here, right?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying we have to maybe rethink our mandate and maybe make some exceptions for cases like that. And we plan to do that. And by next year's induction, we may have changed it, and we may have taken a serious look at guys like those two that we just mentioned.
Well, any guy that brought the Grey Cup to Regina for the first time ever can get that done, I'm sure. Right, John?
Absolutely, Paul.
I got to ask you this, though. It was a sad day in Rider Nation. One of your friends, one of the longtime voices of Rough Rider football, Harvey Johnson, passed away. Just your thoughts on Harvey. I enjoyed working with him for a few years. He was a gentleman, and as good a stats man as he was an unbelievable person.
No doubt about it. It was a great shock. When John Lynch phoned me, John Lynch and he were good, very good friends. He phoned me right after he heard the news, and it was a shock. Harvey was an outstanding gentleman, but he was a great sportsman, not just in football. I mean, he worked for nearly 50 years on the Rider broadcast, statistician mostly, but also as in other capacities at times, including doing post-game shows on occasion, stuff like that. And he was a great asset to the Rider broadcast for all those years. He was just outstanding. And he was also a great baseball player. People maybe don't know that, but he played he got a baseball scholarship in the States, and he played for many years for the Red Sox. Again, as the years that they were coached by the great Gord Curry, he was also a great baseball coach and had some successful years with the Red Sox. So Harvey played third base for many years with the Red Sox. And in fact, this summer, and I talked to him a few weeks ago, and he was very excited that he was going to be inducted into the Saskatchewan Baseball Hall of Fame this summer up in Battleford. He was very excited about going up there and being in receiving that honor. Yeah. So it shows that he was a great sportsman and not just a great football guy. And of course, in the football, I put him on my Plaza of Honor selection committee about 3 years ago because his knowledge and his knowledge of the history of a lot of the players goes back a long ways, and he was just a great asset to our committee with his input and with the knowledge of those players. So he just had a great impact in so many ways.
Hey, I want to ask you one last question as it relates to the Plaza, as it relates to your friend Harvey Johnson there, because I've heard this brought up too. There is no there is no media wing, and I'm not saying that in a self-serving way, John. No, I don't think I'd ever be in it. But what I'm getting at is guys like Harvey Johnson, 49 years. This guy was part of relaying the message that JFK was assassinated to Saskatchewan Rough Rider football fans in 1963. That's how long he's been around.
That's exactly right.
You got John Lynch, your buddy there, and he's been a football crazy fan, but also a broadcaster for a number of years. You know, and I look at a guy like Bob Hughes, Chaos by the Creek. Has that ever come up? Why don't we have a media wing here?
Oh, it's definitely come up. We've looked at this very seriously, and in fact, one of the things when I said we were going to relook at our mandate doesn't really allow it the way we've got it set up. But it's something that, you know, we may have to consider is maybe have a bit of a maybe have a media wing or something like that incorporated. But you have to remember the initial intent of the Plaza of Honor was for players and builders of the club directly.
Yeah.
And as important as you media guys are, and you are damn important, there's no question. You help spread the Rider Pride message and all that stuff. But it's, you know, we have to look a little bit differently at the Plaza and broaden it a bit. And we will look at that. I promise you this fall when we redo the mandate, and that'll be one of the topics that we'll really look at seriously.
Yeah.
And Balzi, you'll be on my list.
Oh God, I don't expect to be, but I sure, you know, I grew up though with the Harvey Johnsons and the John Lynches and the Jeff Couriers and those, you know, Ron Barnett. I'd like to see some of these guys honored in some way, even if you can't put them in the Plaza. But John, this is a pleasure. You're one of the guys that's helped grow this game and keep it alive in Saskatchewan, and has allowed me to kind of continue doing a podcast like this. So thanks for taking some time out. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Balzi.
Joining us now on the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Collision Repairs, Len Antonini with Regina Minor Football. You know, I watch you work the stands there, selling your 50-50s at the Spring League there. Where did you learn that salesmanship?
I think Tom Shepard taught me that, how to bully people into buying things. That's basically where I learned how to do it.
Tell you what, what are the reviews like for your facility out there? I know we talked about it the last time we were on, but what are the teams saying about the locker rooms and everything?
Well, the facility has turned out to be just wonderful. We've had the Thunder and the Riot here as well, and the teams, the Spring League teams, get to keep their dressing room all week long, and they're, you know, they're really enjoying that, and you know, the upstairs and everything that we built, the classroom, the boardroom, all the different things that we've got in here now. It's just making our program that much better.
Yeah,
we're really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's outstanding. You spoke of Tom Shepard. I saw him and John Lipp, two past presidents of the Rough Riders, in the crowd yesterday. They're just loving that Spring League and the way it's developing. I've talked to Frank McChrystal and Bernie Schmidt, two old-timers back up there in the booth coaching. What's it like to have those two old-timers back there now helping out? It's nice to see them pass their knowledge on to the younger guys.
Yeah, it's always good to have guys come back, and I think they're just having some fun out there and enjoying, you know, just enjoying some young kids and enjoying teaching them something that, you know, they've been doing it for a long, long time. It's been really good. I'm pretty happy for them.
What I love about your Spring League, Len, is that it combines, you know, Sheldon and O'Neill and Riffle and Winston Knoll and Belfer and Miller. All the schools come together on one team, like four different teams, but they all come together like a melding pot. And I like it. It's a nice setup. And you know what I like about it? It's not about wins and losses. It's about development. And really, that's what the sport of football is about. That's what it should be about at the RMF level. And you've got the Fall League coming up, registration deadline on the way.
Yeah, the Spring League, it's probably one of the best things that we've come up with. And like you say, it gets the kids, you know, everybody in Regina knows each other now. And I think it helps them at the U16 level and the U18 level, you know, and then just the registration, you know, to go a little farther, our fall season registration, we've extended the deadline to the 16th. Only because Kelly Hamilton and myself are working on the 15th, so it's a little easier for people to come down and take a look at our building here at Libel Field. And you know, if they want to register in person, they can drop by and see us. We're going to be there from about 10 o'clock in the morning till about 10 o'clock at night on Wednesday the 16th. And our finals in the Spring League are going then as well. So there's some great football for them to watch.
All right, Len. So this podcast is a billboard for you, my friend. Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako. It's a billboard for you right now. Why should I sign my kid up to play football?
Well, you know, when you take a look at it, Ballsy, tackle football is for kids of every size, speed, you know, talent, that type of thing. We have a position for everybody in it. You know, the kids can get involved. And, you know, I was talking to some guys this morning about our U16 program, and it just the camaraderie and everything that they end up having just makes them better disciplined kids, and the relationship with each other is way better. Like you mentioned, the kids that play Spring League, you know, from different schools, they get to know each other, and it just makes it's a family. You know, it's a it's something that we're, you know, I've always been a proponent of you know, the discipline of the game, and these kids getting an opportunity. Everybody gets an opportunity to play and be part of a team, and it works out very good for all of them.
You know, Paul Harrison, one of your coaches, got honored at the Thunder dinner. I really like guys like him that are coaching. They don't have a dog in the fight in terms of kids, but they're still coaching and giving back to the community. You got to give a shout out to your coaches that really are instrumental in keeping this thing going.
Yeah, guys like Paul, and you know, you take a look at Brandon Brooks with the Lakers in the core of the city, and you know, a lot of these guys, Pete Pasco, a bunch of guys that you know, they're putting their time back in even though their kids aren't playing. But it's, you know, it's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, you get to see a lot kids grow up, and it's something that, you know, I've been doing it for 25 years, Ballsy, and you know as well as I do that it's just nice being out at the field and, you know, watching the game and seeing the smile on their faces.
And you won't find a better facility than the one at Libel Field with the setting and the trees and everything like that. I absolutely love it. I've always said, if you just got blindfolded and dropped there, minus the mountains, you'd think you're in BC or Calgary somewhere. It's just such a lovely setting. We have a gem right here in Regina. Okay, so once again, Len, if they want to register for fall football, how do they get on board?
They can go online and register at www.reginaminorfootball.ca. Or for the next, the next little while here, I'll be at the office, you know, on the 16th for sure, which is our final day. If they want to come down and do it in person, you know, I'll be there from 10 in the morning till about 10 o'clock that night. There's games going on. They can come by, take a look at the new facility and everything, you know, so they can drop by and pay cash or check if they want to come down in person, you know, if they don't want to do it online. But and the online's pretty good too.
What I love about it too, it's pretty affordable compared to other activities for kids.
Yeah, it's not going to cost you more than, you know, the most, our biggest is the Bantams, and it's $310 for them. You know, it goes down 20. Pee-wee's 290, Adams 270, and then our Mighty Mites, which is our 7, 8, and 9-year-olds, is $300, but it includes all the equipment you need. So you get the practice pants, you get the girdle, you get the game jersey, you get everything. So, you know, it's affordable, and it's something that I think a lot of kids, want an opportunity to try.
The stars of tomorrow today at Libel Field with the RMF. Thanks for this, Len.
Yeah, thanks a lot to you, Baldy. You're doing a great job. We appreciate everything you do for minor football. Thanks a lot, buddy.
And Noah Picton, quarterback at the University of Regina Rams, and hopefully the Toronto Argonauts, joins us in the Growing the Game podcast with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. We'll get to the Argonauts stuff in a second, but the latest news coming down, Noah, is that Darian Durant is calling it a career. You're Regina born and bred. How did Darian Durant, if he did, how did he influence your career?
You know, whether it's my career, but really just kind of passion for the game and passion for the Riders, it seems like people in Regina, they'll have a quarterback that they grew up watching. For some, it's Lancaster. Others, it's Kent Austin. But for me, it was Darian. So, you know, it's some of my fondest memories are watching him on the football field and do the thing that he does. So to see him go, it's sad. You know, obviously, you congratulate him on a spectacular career, and he'll be a part of Rider history forever. But he definitely helped me, kind of fall in love with the game growing up.
What did you learn from him, if anything, in training camp in 2015? Because I know you got to spend some time and soaking some things in from him.
You know, what I really took from him is that just the type of teammate that he is in person, how he interacted with the guys in the locker room, and how he was kind of beloved by everyone in that locker room. And, you know, he really He really was the full package of what it meant to be a professional quarterback, and you know, how we operated day to day in meetings to the practice field and game preparation. It's something that I tried to resemble coming back to the Rams. So to be able to get to know him as a person, as a football player.
I know you said in our Wolf Morning Show with the Chad and Ballsy, you said what you liked about him was he was a football player.
Absolutely. You know, it's just watching his style of play, and you know, he wasn't just simply a quarterback who would sit in the pocket and throw. You know, he wasn't scared of making plays with his legs and taking contact to get the extra yard. And you know, he was a team first guy, and that's something you can really appreciate. And it's not always a given at any level of football, but you know, he was team first and willing to act selflessly and do whatever it takes to win. So that's something that I really admired about him and really looked up to.
Before we talk about the good, let's talk about, I don't say the bad, but the negative a bit. The draft comes and goes. You're the Heck Creighton Trophy winner 2 years ago. You've got all the Can West passing records. You're the guy, but you don't get drafted. Did that hurt?
If I said it didn't, I understood that it was going to be tough from the get-go, but you know, as a competitive person, you want to do well, and you work hard, and you expect some things to happen. And you know, as the rounds went on, it got more and more difficult. And then especially after the draft, when I didn't get a call right away, it was upsetting. And you know, a couple of days had gone by, and I thought that the CFL shot might have come and passed, the window had closed. So It was difficult. It was frustrating. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just wanted to get to a camp, and that's where I find myself now. So it's all good from here.
Tell me about the phone call from the Toronto Argonauts.
It was pretty cool. It was, you know, I missed the initial call. I was out at the U of R field throwing with Mitch, my cousin, and a couple guys. So I realized that I missed phone call, and it was from Spencer Zimmerman, the assistant GM. So, you know, I was sure to call him right back, and it was exciting to see that name and number pop up.
Now, 2015, you went to the Ryder camp basically as a camp arm. I don't anticipate you're going there as a camp arm this time. At least you're not in your mind. Have they told you what they envision for you there?
They haven't given me too much. No, you know, in 2015, I was there to learn, like you said, the camp arm, and this year I'm looking forward to one, learning, but you know, I get to compete, and that's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that. So, you know, I realize that reps are going to be limited, but you know, when you get those, you have to make them count. And you know, everyone at one point or another was a rookie, and the great ones capitalized on their opportunities. So that's kind of what I'm looking for right now.
You know, we started this interview talking about Darian Durant, not a big guy in terms of height, not a well-known guy. He was third on the depth chart. I remember sitting on the golf cart with Roy Shivers, and Roy said, you know, that Durant kid's probably going to be the best quarterback of all the guys we got here. And it turned out that his words were prophetic. So you're right. You don't necessarily start as the guy, but you could be the guy.
One day, yeah. You know, a lot of hard work, but take it one day at a time, but you never know what's going to happen in the future, for sure.
Tell you what, Noah, you couldn't have asked for a better landing spot. Defending Grey Cup champs, you're in Toronto where the, you know, let's face it, for every other sports team there, the media spotlight is on you, but not so much with the Argos, unfortunately. But you're surrounded by Trestman, Calvillo, and Ricky Ray. I mean, you hit the football lottery there.
It's going to be a pretty prolific quarterback room that I get to go sit in and, you know, to learn from those guys and Coach Trestman. You know, just from a couple of the emails, it's really no surprise why they're so successful. You know, you kind of get a taste for what they're about as an organization and people. So it's going to be a heck of a time for me, I'm sure.
And failing, you know, making the team, you still have a cushion in the fact that you get to come back and play your last year with the Rams. Now, you know me, I'm a big fan. I'm pulling for you to make the Argos, and I hope you do. But you've still got that 1 year left with the Rams. Up this interview, your thoughts on the Rams off season and how good you guys look headed into you know, fall camp and get ready for the season.
I think we're going to be strong. You know, Coach Bryce has recruited well. I think we're bringing in some good talent and guys who can make an impact right away. So we've shored up the offensive line. You know, we got a couple guys back from injury, and you know, if we'll see what happens with Atlee, but you know, if we can get him back, we're going to have some weapons on both sides of the ball that I think will be good to go come fall.
Okay, so just to wrap up just the Argo thing and put a bow in this interview, I know you're a pretty cool guy. You've faced a lot of adversity just getting to where you are because of your birth certificate, because of your size. You're tired of answering those questions, so I'm not going to ask you that. But what I want to ask you is this. Do you put any unnecessary pressure on yourself to do some things to wow them? Do you have to, you know, a guy from Birmingham makes a 10-yard throw. Do you feel like you got to make it look better because you're a Canadian and just because of some of the things that you already have going against you?
I don't think so. That's not my mindset. You know, I just want to go there and throw completions and make yards. I'm not going to try to do anything special, you know, because I've realized that what's got me to that point is the way I've played football my career. So I don't want to try to do too much. I think that's kind of an Achilles heel of some guys when they get to the next level or trying to impress somebody. So I'm gonna play the game that I've played my entire life going there.
Well, as the voice of the Rams, I wouldn't mind calling one more year of Noah Pickton football, but as the voice of the Rams, I want to see you make the Argo. So good luck, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Mike.
And the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an O-O and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair, 2330 7th Avenue. Now, we like to support all types of football, including female football. And when we're talking about female football in this province, we're talking about the Valkyries and the Regina Riot, who meet in Saskatoon this weekend. Saskatoon open up beating Winnipeg 48-0, and the Regina Riot over the Manitoba Fearless 56-14. We're joined by receiver/special teams coach Claire Dore. How are you, Claire?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. So tell us about the first game of the season against Manitoba, a lopsided victory. Just from your eyes, how did it look?
I think our team did really well. We had a game plan and we went out there and executed. Of course, there's always room for improvement, so that's what we're working on this week.
Are you guys a passing team? I talk about you being a receivers coach. Do you like to put the ball in the air?
Well, of course, as a receiver, we always think we're open and we always want the ball.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme, we're actually quite a balanced team between our run game and our pass game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we will do what needs to happen.
Okay, so Saskatoon is hosting you guys, and they obviously, like I just mentioned as we led into this interview, whipped their opponents in week number one. What do you expect from the Valkyries? They're always a tough matchup. I think you guys have played them 9 times and a 5-4 record against them, so it's going to be tight.
Well, again, our main focus is always on ourselves, and like I said, we're taking last week's game and looking on improving our own game, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, expecting the best out of our athletes.
So tell us about your football background. How long have you been in the game for?
Well, I started playing touch football back in 1996 and joined the Riot in its first year in 2011. I've been fortunate enough to play with the Riot for 7 years and now transitioned, as you mentioned, to coaching the receivers. In that tenure, I was fortunate enough also to play on Team Sask in 2012 and 2016. And take 2 tours with Team Canada in 2013 and 2017.
So tell me, how's the transition been from player to coach?
Well, I love coaching and have coached other sports prior to football. That first year, you know, transitioning from player to coach is a little bit tough. Not going to lie, I still have the itch to put the pads on and get out there. But I really felt that this was the best way I could contribute to the Riot, is to be on the sidelines as a coach. So I'm happy to be there, and I really hope that the team is feeling the benefits of me and the experiences I've had with football.
What did you coach in the past? I know you're at Belford Collegiate. What's your coaching background entail?
Well, I started out coaching basketball when I was quite young, coaching a rec youth team, 5- and 6-year-olds. I was probably about 9. I started out there. I've coached high school basketball since my internship and even prior to that, so dating back to 1998. I've coached team handball since about 1998 as well. So I've been around the coaching block, but tackle football is a bit new to me.
Okay, so talk about tackle football for a second in terms of the coach. Are you looking at the game differently through a different set of eyes now? What maybe do you appreciate more about coaching that you didn't appreciate before in terms of football coaching when you were playing?
Well, it becomes really evident that, you know, as much as the players have to operate as a team and as a unit, so do the coaches. You know, we joke about receivers always thinking they're open, but we have to really have an appreciation for all aspects of the game and we have to work together. So sometimes, you know, I have to be coaching my receivers to block more and improve at their blocking because I appreciate the need game in our balance. And, you know, that if the coaching staff doesn't get along or disagrees on priorities, that, you know, we can't benefit the players as much as we need to.
Okay, Claire Doré joining us here on the Growing the Game podcast with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. So taking all your coaching, all the years coaching, including this brief stint right now so far with the Regina Riot, what's your best attribute, Claire, as a coach, do you think?
Oh, gosh. I like to say that it's, you know, I have the experience to back up things I say. I'm not going to ask my athletes to do anything I wouldn't do myself. And that makes me really down to earth as a coach.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. You know, we talk about just removing yourself from the game to coach. There's a little bit of credibility there, or a lot of credibility, when you tell somebody, hey, run the route like this, or why did you take that special team or something like that. You've actually done it recently.
Right, and with a number of these girls from the Riot. So the veteran players certainly are aware of what my work ethic was like and how I, you know, played the game. And so when I'm asking to do things, them to do things, they certainly have that recollection and understand where I'm coming from.
Is there an uncomfortability there that they used to be your teammates and now you're coaching them so soon?
I don't think so. Without disclosing my age entirely, there was a bit of an age gap between me and a number of the players.
Yeah.
So I did play a bit of a role, you know, as a bit of a elder statesperson on the team. And so that separation makes this transition into coaching, I would like to hope, pretty smooth.
By the way, I'd never ask a lady's age, so don't worry about that, okay? Lastly, as we go forward here, you got to be excited, don't you? You were on the ground floor helping grow football, women's football in Saskatchewan, and everybody I talked to, you know, it's out in Melville now. It's Moosomin. It's growing. How exciting is that?
Oh, it's absolutely thrilling to see. When we first started, right, we were a small group in one meeting room. And what's wonderful is that the impact that those individual players have had to go out and back home to their communities or to develop as coaches and contribute not only in Regina but beyond, and seeing other programs develop and seeing more young women playing the sport that we all love is just incredible. And it makes us so hopeful for the future as to how far this can develop. And I hope to be now at the front end of some of that coaching development and working to see more women involved in not only playing but coaching tackle football.
And what's cool about it is it used to be the stereotype, oh, it's just girls playing football, can't be that good. You blindfold somebody, put them in a stadium now, and you'd be like, holy cow, you couldn't, you know, that stereotype's gone, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely, I agree. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who aren't sold yet, but if anybody comes live to the stadium and sees these elite athletes in action, I think they would understand the credibility behind the game.
So game time Saturday, when and where?
This Saturday, May 12th, 8 p.m. at Griffith Stadium in Saskatoon.
All right, Claire Doré and the Regina Riot up against the Saskatoon Valkyries, a battle of 1-0 teams. Good luck, Claire.
Thank you so much.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.